are distributed to a small group that is an oligarchy. And that small group generally tends to suggest that they are smarter than everybody else. You're not smart enough to make your own laws, so we're the smart people. We're going to make all the laws, and then you just follow them. Well, is it any surprise that that group makes all the laws that favor their little group? They don't have to live by them. Well, this is just for you. This is your law, not my law. I think one of the stipulations to any law that Congress passed is that they should be subject to it for 5 years before it becomes subject to us. We want to test it out. So if we continue with this and we spread power to everybody, you have a democracy. But most of the people in my class, that I give a quiz at the beginning, you know, what type of government do we have? And democracy is one of the answers. And 95% of the people say, oh, democracy. Why do they think that we have a democracy?
Every politician says
every president since Woodrow Wilson has been trying to make the world safe for democracy. I hate democracy. The Founding Fathers loathed democracy. They called it a tyranny of the majority. Why? Because you have no rights in a democracy. Democracy is majority rule. Democracy is also minority lose. You only have privileges that are granted to you by the will of the majority. So let's pretend that we all have an equal amount of land, and your land has water on it that I want. And I offer to buy it from you. You go, no, it's been in my family for, you know, ages and ages. I don't want to sell it. I go, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to put this up for a vote. I vote that we divide this man's land up between the rest of us. And this is democracy. How many people vote yes? Well, you lose. We're going to let you vote. That's a democracy. So you do not have a democracy. You have no rights in a democracy. We have, obviously, a republic. He said, well, isn't it, don't we get the vote? Well, yes, you get to vote, but you don't get to vote on everything. There's a difference. In a democracy, we can vote on any damn thing we want. So, I mean, in a republic, there are certain things that you don't get to vote on. You know, the color of your living room, you know, whether or not we sell your land, anything that is your property, that's not up for a vote. If you have a right to life, we can't vote to put you to death because you're just cluttering up the place. Well, we operate in this country as if the United States is a democracy. That's what that whole Million Mom March bullshit is all about. Rosie O'Donnell goes to Washington, and she thinks that if she gets enough million moms, she can vote away my right to keep and bear arms. Well, guess what, sweetheart? I'm not asking for your permission. You know, it's a right, not a privilege. I'm not asking you for permission. And the other story, again, the Second Amendment is the one that, I mean, put me on a soapbox, we're going to the Second Amendment sooner or later. Everything is a Second Amendment issue. But what I generally do when I get one of these tree-hugger, anti-gun, whatever, I usually sidetrack them and I say, well, did you know that your freedom of speech is limited to crossword puzzles and Scrabble? And they go, what? You go, no, it's not. I said, oh, well, your freedom of speech is limited to only the things that I agree with, so you need to call me on the phone and I'll tell you whether or not you can say it. They go, that's absurd. I said, well, are you telling me that you can say anything that you want? Yeah. Even if it's going to just like give me an upset stomach? Yeah. Even if I'm going to go home and toss and turn all night because of the stuff that you're saying? Well, yeah. I said, well, thank you. Because if that's the way the First Amendment works, that's the way the Second Amendment works. I'm not asking you for permission. You don't have to like the fact that I've got a gun on my hip. You may get nauseous. You may go to home and toss and turn all night. Tough noogies. That's your problem.
Might be offended.
You know, be offended. I don't care. But my right is not based on your vote or your permission. So once you really, really understand the difference between rights and privileges, I mean, it's a non-issue. The problem is that everybody generally wants their rights, but they want to limit yours. You know, as long as you're saying what I'd like, then you have freedom of speech. But if I don't like what you're saying, well, then, you know, gosh, this is hate speech. You know, like, so what? So what if it's hate speech? Let the idiot stand up there on the soapbox and say all that stupid stuff. Don't stop him from talking. Stand on the soapbox next to him and go, idiot. Use your freedom of speech to point out how stupid he is. Don't try to limit his right to be insane. Why don't we take a little coffee break here? Make people think. All right, let's go ahead and continue. Let's go through, go to page 5 and talk about the founding documents. Most people recognize and acknowledge that the Declaration of Independence is basically the piece of paper that started or officially demarks the beginning of the Revolutionary War. Who knows what officially ended the Revolutionary War?
Treaty of Paris.
Anybody who's read the Treaty of Paris recognizes that it's very much like a divorce settlement. You know, you get the kids, I get the car, you get the house, I get the dog. It's basically a separation of stuff. So what did the United States get in this separation?
Nothing. There were 13 different treaties, isn't that right? One for each colony.
No. No, it was
the allodial title to the property.
We get allodial title to the property. We get our very own property. You know, and we get to do things for ourselves. What did the British get?
Commerce.
Trade rights. So you got all these British people manufacturing stuff, and we've got 2 million people in North America that are customers. And so basically England got the right to travel up and down the Mississippi River to sell all of their stuff. So basically we had this business agreement. So again, it wouldn't surprise me that everybody in this group knows it, but most people are not familiar with the Articles of Confederation. My question to them is, when was the Declaration of Independence signed? 4th of July, well actually it was signed August 2nd of 1776, but, you know, and my comment out to them is that, so Declaration of Independence is 4th of July, the Constitution was the 5th of July. They go, no. They know that that's not true, but they're not really sure when the Constitution happens, and they didn't even realize that, gosh, there was, what, Articles of Confederation? Well, the important thing is the different types of government. There's a difference between a federal government and a national government. An Articles of Confederation. A confederation is a group of entities. You had 13 separate colonies. Each of those colonies was a nation, like France, Italy, Germany. They were separate nations. And they were united. The Declaration of Independence is the unanimous declaration. Well, how could it be unanimous if there's only one? So there had to be 13 entities, and they grouped together in a confederation, kind of like joining the YMCA. Okay? The United States is currently a member of the United Nations, but you know, they were joined together in this club. So now they're in this Articles of Confederation, the Revolutionary War is over, and everything is wonderful, right? Well, how did we pay for the Revolutionary War? Who did we borrow money from?
France.
France and Spain. Why did they send us money? Because we look so good?
They had a vested interest in us winning against England because of their own complex with England.
King George was fighting battles in Europe. Who was he fighting against?
France.
France and Spain. You think that France and Spain would say, you want to fight the king too? Here's money. Like, you know, your enemy is our enemy. Hey, go for it, you know. We'll pay you the money, you start shooting. That's why France and Spain were so generous, not because, you know, gosh, they thought we were good looking. So at the end of the Revolutionary War, guess who wants their money back? France and Spain. It was a loan. So we're all standing around going, well, gosh, how are we going to pay that? And each of the 13 colonies had some proportion of the money that they were supposed to pay back. He said, Virginia, come on, pay up. And Virginia said, well, you know, maybe next month. You know, we're just still kind of getting tobacco grown over here and, you know, spending money on Virginia. Massachusetts didn't want to chip in, you know. And so the continental government had no authority to tax. It could ask, go, please, please pay your fair share. But they couldn't force anybody. So when the states were being asked for money, what do you think they did? Printed it. What else do governments do? Go to the Xerox machine, crank, 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 crank. How much do I owe you? Just a second, don't go away. So what happens when you start printing money and it's not based on anything? You devalue it. It's called inflation. And so with 13 colonies each printing their own money, plus the Continental Congress printing another form of money, and they're all racing against each other to see who could print faster, we were in a terrible inflationary period. And if I give you a dollar today and it's worth 50 cents next week, are you going to take the dollar? No! What happens when nobody will accept your money? The economy grinds to a halt. And they went, whoa, time out, we got to fix this. We want you guys to go to Philadelphia and modify the Articles of Confederation. Add a paragraph here, subtract a sentence there. Is that what they did? No. They scrapped it completely and rewrote it from scratch. There were people who said, wait a minute, you can't do that. Patrick Henry is one of them. Patrick Henry refused to go because he smelt a rat. He says, you guys aren't authorized to do that. Now, when they went, there were two groups. Well, first of all, they went to Philadelphia, and all of the representatives, they just kind of hugged each other, sang kumbaya, and it was just all unanimous, right?
Wrong.
No, they had two groups. They almost got into fisticuffs. But you had two factions. You had Alexander Hamilton's group, and that, we were just talking about this. Alexander Hamilton was a monarchist. He wanted one strong central government. What he wanted was a national government. So what did he call his group? Federalists. Well, that's not what he is. He's a nationalist. Why did he call himself Federalist? He was lying. The people aren't going to like his point of view if they know, if he says, I'm a nationalist, I want a strong central government. These people just fought the Revolutionary War. You think they want another King George? No! They were afraid of a strong central government. So Alexander Hamilton lied and called his group Federalists. Thomas Jefferson and his friends wanted a federal government. They were Federalists. Can they call themselves that? No, that name's already been taken. So what do they get? They get anti-federalists. Does that sound like you're for or against it? So politicians have been lying since before they wrote the Constitution.
Well, at least that's consistent throughout history.
So whenever we talk about the federal government, we really aren't talking about a government that is federal. We're talking about a national government. Washington, D.C. is national. And we need to basically understand the difference of that. Now, the preamble to the Constitution. We the people, in order to form a more perfect union, we ordain the Constitution. We create Congress. They work for us. The Constitution operates as a negative authority. It's a whole list of things that government can't do. A very small list of things they can do. Where's the list of things they can do?
Article 3, Section 8.
Article 1, Section 8. Okay? Article 1, Section 8 is a list of 18 things. They can lay and collect taxes, they can coin money, they can build post offices and post roads, they can have a navy, an army. That 18 list is really small. After we've created a navy, we've created an army, what's next? Well, okay, we could build a post office every year. What's next? Sit around and scratch our head. There's a clause in Article 1 that says Congress must get together at least once every year. Why is that there? How often is Congress in session now? Like 11 months a year? They just take December off so they can go to the Bahamas with their secretaries, don't they? So why are they in? Why would we even bother to put a clause that says at least once a year? Because if they were only doing the stuff they're allowed to do, they'd only be there for once a month. I mean, they were afraid that they would get elected every 2 years and they'd just go home. So that clause kind of hints that there's not a whole lot for you to do. Why do public officials take an oath of office?
So they can be held accountable.
Okay? So they can be held accountable. The U.S. Constitution and each state constitution is a political trust. It is a contract. And I don't have a whole lot of time, but if I have a... If I want to leave money to my children, and I know I'm going to die before that, I can't give $10 million to my 10-year-old. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get Uncle George to be the trustee, and I write up a contract with Uncle George. I am the creator of the trust, or the grantor. Uncle George is the trustee. He's the person I am trusting, and my children are beneficiaries. Do my children have to do anything to get that money? No, usually just turn 21, you know, be old enough to be responsible for it. And so this is a trust. Does Uncle George have a choice about giving the money to the kids? No, he has a fiduciary responsibility. He is obligated by contract to give that money to my children. The Constitution is a political trust. Our founding fathers are not leaving us money, they are leaving us the security of liberty. What is the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. So they are leaving us freedom, and they wrote a contract. Now, you can't have one guy do it because they'll die before we get down to us, and so it's a political trust. The people who take an oath of office are trustees. They take an oath of office. They swear on their honor that they will uphold and defend the Constitution. If a person takes that oath of office and then violates your rights, what two crimes are they guilty of?
Treason.
Violating their oath.
What do you call violating their
contract?
Perjury. So, if you perjure yourself, what happens?
Both felonies.
Yeah, they're both felonies. You go to jail. If you commit treason, it's punishable by life in prison or death. We're not talking any, penny-ante stuff here. This is serious stuff. How many people realize that we have a system of checks and balances? You hear about it all the time. Okay, what are the serious system of checks and balances?
The three branches of government,
legislative, executive, and judicial.
Actually, there's four. People.
The people is the fourth branch of government. Now, the Constitution has seven articles. The first three are the important ones, and they are not coincidentally, legislative, judicial, or executive, and judicial. Article 1 tells you everything you need to know about Congress. Article 2 tells you everything you need to know about the President and Vice President. Article 3 tells you everything that you need to know about the Supreme Court. Let's jump to page 6 in your little handout and talk about Article 3, judicial, because that's where most of the corruption is.
How can you tell where most of it is?
Trust me. That's where it's covered up.
That's right. That's where it's covered up.
If you read Article 3 of the Constitution, it says that we will have a judiciary which consists of the Supreme Court and subordinate courts. They will have authority over three jurisdictions: common law, equity law, and admiralty law. Common law is basically stuff that's common sense. If I pull out a gun and go bang and shoot this young lady, do we have to look in a book and say, wait a minute, I think that was against the law? No, we all know. You can't do that. You don't have to look it up. It's common sense. I violated her property. You violated her body. So common law is derived from English common law. There are no victimless crimes under common law. No body, no crime. End of story. Now, what is equity law? Equity law is a form of law which tries to be fair. If whatever the thing is will not be adjudicated under common law, there's some, you know, something where it's, the line is not real clear, then the judge can make an arbitrary decision. And that arbitrary decision is supposed to try to make things as fair as possible. This is what the result would be if common law did apply. How many know what admiralty law is?
Maritime
law. What does maritime generally mean?
On the seas.
On the sea. Okay? Maritime law is the law of the sea. What is the Constitution? It is the supreme law of the land. And according to the Constitution, the law of the sea is supposed to stop at the high water mark.
Well, maritime law has a dictate.
Yes. I've been sailing since I was 14, so this is pretty much common sense to me. But how many people have heard the phrase, the captain's word is law? Okay, that's not a euphemism meaning, well, the captain's a little grouchy until he gets his second cup of coffee. It means the captain's word is law. He doesn't have to be right. He just has to be the captain. Rights derive from property. Who owns the ocean? Nobody. So if you are out in the middle of the ocean on your boat, the captain basically is the dictator of his little tiny floating country. He is the dictator for that little floating country. So if he's out at sea and he finds another boat out there floating around with nobody on it, who owns it?
He does.
He does. That's salvage rights. And if you study the Uniform Commercial Code, Uniform Commercial Code. Well, code, first of all, is not law. It's an interpretation of law. And we had equity law and admiralty law. Well, those are two different jurisdictions. And it was a little bit confusing. So they made everything uniform. What does that mean? They kind of blended equity law and admiralty law together for convenience.
And we got
was that your convenience? No. For the judge's convenience. And they call it statutory law. All right? Now, equity law, the judge can make an arbitrary decision. In admiralty law, the judge is basically the king. Do you want to go into court where you have no rights? That's where you go every time you go to traffic court. And you walk in and say, but Your Honor, I got, you know, constitutional rights. They go, shut up. You say that again, I'm going to hold you in contempt of court. Because you're in the wrong jurisdiction. You've got to know what the jurisdiction is. So if you go into court, any court, and the judge says, do you plead innocent or guilty? Do not say, I'm innocent, because you've just acquiesced to the jurisdiction of the court. Your first question should be, wait a minute, before I plead, I have a few questions. My questions are, does this court take judicial notice of the United States Constitution? Now, do you think a judge is going to openly say that he does not recognize the Constitution? No, the Constitution is null and void. Well, he's not going to say that out loud. So yes, the court will take judicial notice of the U.S. Constitution. Do they take judicial notice of the Texas Constitution? Yes? Okay, fine. Well, according to my copy of the Constitution, there is common law, equity law, or admiralty law. Is this one of those? Well, we know for sure that it's not common law, and he's not about to admit that this is admiralty law.
That's what the flag up there means.
That's what the flag with the fringe, that means it's admiralty law. It's under a military jurisdiction. And so he's going to say, no, this is not admiralty law, this is statutory law. And I'm going to grab my Constitution and say, well, you know, I'm looking at Article 3, and I don't know, could you show me where it says statutory law? I mean, I'm just, you know, like, if I'm going to defend myself, I wanted to know where that is. Well, it's not in the Constitution. Well, if it's not in the Constitution, then it is extra-constitutional. The Constitution doesn't prohibit statutory law, but it's also not recognized by the Constitution. So, if I am under the Constitution, I have to volunteer into statutory law and statutory jurisdiction. And I don't. Thank you very much. And I walk out.
You hope you walk out.
That sounds good.
You walk out with a bullet. You try.
What really happens is they don't grab that son of a bitch and take him over there.
Yeah.
I see your driver's license.
So, Article 4 talks about kind of the relationships between the people in government and the states and the federal government. It talks about how new states can be added. And Article 4, Section 4, the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government. It's right there in black and white. Now, people may or may not know what republican government is, but at least we have, you know, a reference to it. I wanted to put a campaign advertisement in the Austin American Statesman, and if I had my picture and it had a couple of sentences about me, and then it had a paragraph, and my paragraph started out by saying, the United States is not a democracy. It is a constitutional republic. And I faxed it to the newspaper. They called me 10 minutes later, and they said, well, we got your ad. The editor wants to change it. I said, really? What does he want to change? He said, well, the editor wants it to say, the United States is not a democracy, in my opinion. I said, no. I said, it has nothing to do with opinion. I said, it's a statement of fact. And she got real indignant and said, well, do you have any documentation to back that up? And I couldn't believe it. I said, well, does Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution count? And I got my book, I Xeroxed it, made an enlargement, so it says 8 by 11, you know, and I faxed it to them. United States shall guarantee. And they called back and said, that'll work. You know, it's amazing. They don't even know. Okay, let me keep going through this. I want to get through to what I ultimately came here to talk about. Article 5 talks about how to modify the Constitution. The Founding Fathers realized that, you know, they were not omniscient, they couldn't foresee into the future, and they did leave us a way to modify it. It ain't easy, but it's not supposed to be easy. You need two-thirds of Congress to propose it and three-quarters of the existing states to ratify it. So you have to have a supermajority of people going, yeah, this is a good thing. Okay? We had the 18th Amendment to prohibit alcohol. At least they took the time and effort to amend the Constitution. But now, what the hell, we just have a drug war, we just declare everything illegal. We don't even waste time modifying the Constitution. Article 6 basically is a short paragraph saying that we're going to accept all the debts that we had under the Articles of Confederation. Those are still good. Article 7 is basically a sentence that says, signed, sealed, delivered, you know, I'm yours. It gives the date. All right? Now, I want to talk briefly about the Bill of Rights. Most people know that the Constitution has a preamble. Most people do not know that the Bill of Rights has a preamble. The first time I read that, I thought it was a typo. I've got a copy of the Bill of Rights on my wall, and I walked around the corner, and it's like, oh my God, there it is. And they don't want the preamble, because the preamble, this is where it's all in black and white. The preamble to the Bill of Rights says, the conventions of a number of the states having at the time of their adopting the Constitution, expressed a desire, in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added, and as extending the ground of public confidence in the government will best ensure the beneficent ends of its institution. So we are saying, in writing, that these are further declaratory and further restrictive clauses.
They're not amendments.
Okay? They're not amendments. The Bill of Rights doesn't give you your rights. These are declaratory statements. I am telling you that I have freedom of speech. I am telling you that I have a right to keep and bear arms. I'm not asking for permission. The Bill of Rights cannot be repealed. I've had people say that we're just going to repeal the Second Amendment.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. It is an article, not an amendment, correct?
That's right.
Okay. From 11 on are amendments.
So you cannot... If you can repeal the Second Amendment, take away like right to keep and bear arms, then we can repeal the First Amendment, take away your freedom of religion, your freedom of speech.
And the whole Constitution.
The whole Constitution. What the hell good is it?
Right. But you got to remember, they did the 18th, and then they repealed it. So there are a lot of people, including so-called officials, who really believe that the Million Mile March or whatever, you're going to be able to appeal this stuff.
They're wrong.
That's why they call
them. They're uninformed. And that's our job, is to teach them. You know, give them the information and they will be vigilant. Show them, you know, the means and they will, you know, take the corrective measures. So, you need to memorize the Bill of Rights. It would take you an evening. They're short. Some of them are just one sentence. If you don't know your rights, you ain't got any. End of story. Now, the reason that I'm here, presumably, is because I do not have a driver's license.
Oh, right.
And I also do not have a license plate. Instead, I had these. I had a box of these made up. And I wear one of these on the back of my Trans Am. All right? Now, I have been stopped a number of times. The first time I was stopped, the police officer came to my window and he said, "Excuse me, sir, may I see your driver's license?" I said, "No, sir, you may not." He said, "Why not?" "He says, I don't have one." He says, "Why not?" "He says, because I'm not required to have one."
"Why not?"
And he looked at me like I'd come from Mars. And so, over the course of 20 minutes, I explained to him that only a driver needs a license. A driver is a legal term, meaning somebody who operates a motor vehicle. A motor vehicle is defined in Title 18 of the United States Code, Section 31, as a contrivance used to convey goods or passengers for hire. I've got no goods. I've got no passengers for hire. You know, this is not a vehicle. I'm not a driver. I don't need a license. He says, "That's the most unusual excuse I've ever heard." And I said, "It's not an excuse. It's the law." So recently I've gone to a Texas Law Library.
So how much was the ticket he gave you?
It was no driver's license, no vehicle inspection, no registration, no car insurance, no front license plate, no rear license plate. It had a lot of paperwork. Okay. Fortunately, there were no moving violations. It's all administrative. Basically, they're stomping their foot and going, "Well, you're not filling out our paperwork." "Well, you at least understand me." You know, I'm not filling out your paperwork. So, I went to court and I actually made a mistake.
Let me interject something. When he gave you the paperwork, did you sign your name on the...
I signed Michael UCC 1-207 Bednarik under threat, duress, and coercion. Okay. And so, I went to court and I'm still kind of learning all of this stuff. And so... the judge says, "Yes, we have jurisdiction. You have two choices, bench trial or jury trial." Well, I had a third option, was to walk out because they don't have jurisdiction. As soon as I said, "Okay, jury trial," I had stepped into their jurisdiction.
Oh, no.
Okay. I'm smart now. But, so I agree to a jury trial. I go to the court and, you know, they go through this list and, you know, the day of my jury. So I go walk up to the front and I'm defending myself. Because, somebody else mentioned this, As soon as you have a lawyer,
you lose.
You lose. As soon as you have a lawyer, you become incompetent in the eyes of the law.
Right.
The same as if you take a five-year-old to school, you sign them up for school, the five-year-old doesn't get to pick the school, doesn't get to pick the teacher, doesn't get to pick, you know, you are making those decisions for them. It's because they are incompetent to do that for themselves. As soon as you have a lawyer, as far as the eyes of the court are concerned, you are incompetent. You may as well be an idiot.
Sit down and shut up.
The lawyer is going to make all of your decisions for you, whether they are in your best interest or not. So I go to court, and I have to pick a jury. I've never even been on a jury. How do you know how to pick one? So I've got 17 people, 17 prospective jurors, and six of these people are going to be on my jury. Now, why is it six? Because this is an admiralty court.
It's a trial with jury.
It's a trial with jury, not trial by jury. So the jury can say, oh, he's innocent, and the judge goes, I'm ignoring that, and makes you guilty anyway. Anyway, the prosecutor stands up, and the prosecutor tells these 17 prospective jurors that the prosecution has the burden of proof. True statement, but why are you making it? And then he says, not only do we have the burden of proof, but we have a burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And I looked at him, it's like, are you working for me? I mean, he sounded like my lawyer. And so he sits down and I stand up. I don't know what to talk to these people. And I asked, how many people here can recite the Seventh Amendment? Nobody raised their hand. I said, how many people here can recite the First Amendment? Nobody raises their hand. I said, how many people can tell me what the First Amendment is about? Well, now they're kicking the ground and kind of looking and, you know, just being... You know, because obviously they're embarrassed. They have no clue what the First Amendment is about. And I said, look, I have no idea what the outcome of this trial is going to be. But I guarantee that before this trial is over, you are going to know more about the Constitution than you do right now. So we sit down. The prosecutor calls the first witness. The police officer steps up to the stand. What is your name? How long have you been a police officer? Where were you on February 25th? On and on and on. Do you recognize, you know, and the guy says, yes, he's the guy with the American flag tie. And I wanted to kind of wave at the jury by this time. I'm not having a great time. Right? And then the prosecutor suddenly says, Your Honor, permission to approach the bench? And he goes walking up to the judge. And I'm thinking, my God, my lawyer should be up there. Wait a minute, that's me. So I go running up, and I'm leaning over the judge's bench going, this can't be right. I mean, I felt like I was in the girls' bathroom or something. It's like, you know, it's like... And the prosecutor says, Your Honor, we'd like to file a motion to dismiss. He says, do you have any problem with that? I said, no. And they sat down. They apologized to the jury for dragging them through here, said, we're not going to do anything. And he says, I'm really disappointed. And he looked right at me and said, because I was really looking forward to your arguments. The prosecution dropped the case.
They didn't want anybody to know about the Constitution.
Uh-huh. Okay? Exactly right. They don't want it. They don't want my arguments to go out and have people discover that, oh my God, you don't need a driver's license. The second time I'm driving down the highway, I had four squad cars surround me. I mean, like, slide to a stop in front of me and then behind me. I mean, like, really miniature Waco. What?
Republic of Texas.
That's exactly what they thought I was. They thought that I was Republic of Texas. And as soon as I realized that, I told them, look, I'm not Republic of Texas. I don't have my gun with me. You know, I don't want to do you any physical harm. I want to take you to court and, you know, embarrass the shit out of you. And so he goes back to the squad car, comes back to my window, and he says, well, you have no driver's license. You have no license plate. So what we're going to do is we're going to call a tow truck, and we're going to impound your car. And I said, oh, so then you're telling me that you're going to violate my Fifth Amendment rights. Well, no, sir, we're not going to violate your Fifth Amendment rights. I said, well, sure, certainly sounds like it's me. Fifth Amendment says, in part, that you cannot deprive me of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. If you impound my car, you're depriving me of property. So you're not allowing me to travel to the airport, so you're depriving me of liberty. And unless you're the judge, jury, and executioner, our little roadside chat here doesn't constitute due process of law. Now, does it? He stares at me. And I said, excuse me, are you a public servant? He said, well, yes, sir, I'd like to think so. I said, did you take an oath of office to protect and defend the Constitution? Well, now he stuttered. He's about, and I said, well, now that I've informed you that you're about to violate my Fifth Amendment rights, if you persist and impound my car anyway, I'm going to file a lawsuit against you under Title 42 of the United States Code for acting under a presumption of authority, and under Title 18 of the United States Code for acting under color of law. And I said, and under Texas statute, each of those infractions holds a $300,000 penalty. Now, I admit that it's going to take me several months. I said, but at the end of the summer, I said, I'm going to own your house and your car. And he's staring at me. I said, excuse me, do you have a jet ski? He goes, just a second, sir. Carried away. And he goes running back to the squad car. He powwows with his buddies for a couple minutes. And he comes back and he hands me my passport. He says, we'd like you to park your car over there. He didn't say I had to or this or that. He said, we'd like you to park your car over there. They all jumped into the squad car, slammed the doors, and they all disappeared as quickly as they showed up. And I pulled out my keys and I went, well, I bet this one works. And I drove home. If you don't know your rights, you haven't got any. You first of all have to know your rights, and then you have to have the courage to stand up and defend them. I mean, it's like holding up a crucifix and the vampires just disappear.
Bill, that's not what happened.
So I went back to court for that one. Okay? So I go in court, I've got all my books, and I'm all ready, you know, because this time I'm really going to know what to ask the jury. The judge comes in at 8 o'clock and he calls the docket. You know, Adams, Brown, Smith, Jones, Badnarik. And you have to say, here. If you're not here, they automatically file a warrant for your arrest for failure to appear. So if they don't play the game, you lose. So as soon as they decide who's here, then the prosecutors all go out into the hall, they go to some special room someplace, half an hour, 45 minutes later they come back, the judge comes in and starts reading the docket again. After each name, the prosecutor will say, the state is ready, Your Honor, or we file a motion to dismiss. And so they're doing, you know, Adams, we're ready, Brown, we're ready, you know, Jones, we're ready.